Our next item is going to be a report from our board members. So I will start with you, Mr. Young.
Okay. I've had two meetings. One was last week, Wednesday. I met with Perry Clausen, and this was to go over an item on our agenda. It was item 15. And along with Mr. Clausen was Kara Stewart, who's his associate or assistant or helper, and then Randy Scher, who's a farmer in the Santa Maria area. And they wanted to go over with me the notification changes that they've made to their program. And meeting lasted about 30 minutes, and essentially it's all reflected in the staff report. There wasn't anything different than what's reflected there. And then I had not a water board meeting, but I did attend a water law symposium up in San Francisco last week. And it was mainly for lawyers to get continuing education units. And some of the topics were an overview of California water law. This was geared towards lawyers that are representing ag interests, industrial interests, water purveyors. Felicia Marcus, our chair of our state water board, was there. She gave the keynote address, which I found very informative. I finally got a sense for what the state water board is thinking about water supply and regulations. We had presentations on the public trust doctrine and whether it applies to groundwater. We had updates on the new regulations or the new statutes that were passed by the governor, three bills. Had a discussion about groundwater banking in times of drought, and that was also really interesting for me to learn about. A presentation on the conflict between vineyards and salmon, having to do with the State Water Resources Control Board issuing regulations and limiting water rights for use of water to frost protect vineyards. Didn't know anything about that. That was very fascinating. Also, a whole presentation on Clean Water Act issues, something we don't get involved in, and I'm sure our attorneys and Mr. Harris is aware of this, but when water is transferred from one navigable water to another, there's a whole area involving, you know, whether what Clean Water Act water quality issues apply towards those transfers, and I guess that's undergoing a lot of discussion and transformation because it would impose huge costs on entities that are taking water from one body to another and they pick up contaminants along the way. And the example used was the whole Colorado River Basin and what happens with that water. Also had discussions of management of water in general and the effects of the Endangered Species Act on California's water supply, and then Indian water rights and the Winters Doctrine. So that was a two-day event that I attended, and I'll share with you later things I picked up from what speakers said that were very, very interesting.
And just for the benefit of the rest of the board members, since we're going to be discussing the ag item today, if you could hold your disclosures on that until we get to that item.
Okay.
Since I was asked to hold, I will hold to the ag.
Will I have to repeat mine?
No, once is enough.
Okay. Well, we have to ask Ms. Oaken that question.
So thank you, Mr. Young. Thank you, Mr. Jeffrey. In my case, participated on October the 2nd and 3rd to the WQCC Sacramento meeting, the Water Quality Coordinating Committee. Then on the 9th of October, I attended with Mr. Harris the Morro Bay Cayucas meeting pertaining to potential regionalization of a water treatment plant at the Man's Colony. Then I attended on October the 20th with Mr. Harris, Ms. McCain, and Mr. Harvey Packard, a ISG meeting, which was a closed-door meeting regarding Los Osos. The discussion at meeting was for us to be updated on the progress made between the drinking water entities involved with this ISG. And a heads up on an upcoming report, which is going to be released, I believe, in about a week and a half. And I would like Mr. Harris to add any, you know, further input to this meeting that we had.
So the reason we're talking about this in a little more detail, if you recall, there was discussion at the previous board meetings regarding the Los Osos seawater intrusion and what role the state might have and whether or not it was even appropriate for us to intervene. And of course, it got more complicated with the governor's signing of the three groundwater bills. So what we learned is they are considered once they settle their lawsuit among the warring parties, an adjudicated basin. They, as Mr. Wolf said, have a updated basin plan that they're going to release in the coming weeks. That will include some additional and fairly recent monitoring results. So the residents will be able to see exactly where the seawater front is and in the various aquifers. It also outlines their proposed implementation plan, so that folks will be able to see exactly. And they have made quite a few adjustments to it based on previous comments on the draft plan. Then in early next year, they will be going back to court, and their intention is at that time is to settle the lawsuit among the parties. And there's a whole series of implementation steps that they will be taking. I think the most important takeaway message that we got was they should know within 2 years whether or not what they have designed is actually going to work or not. And they also have to form much like a service district that will overlie the different purveyors to allow them to coordinate the pumping activities and that sort of thing. So at this point, I think the chair, do you want to, or do you want me to mention where we think this board should or should not go with the ISJ at this point?
Yes, please do.
So I think based on our assessment of what happened, we are proposing that we allow, you know, that at this point we allow the ISJ to do their work and finish what they've started. They've put a lot of work into it, and I think at this point there really isn't any value in terms of us intervening in any way. In fact, it would probably be counterproductive and disruptive. So at this point, we're going to take a wait-and-see approach to the ISJ and their implementation of saltwater intrusion program.
And what once the report has been released, the plan is for our staff to at least review its content. And since the meeting that we attended was really sort of a preliminary overview, so I think we still need to apply some due diligence in reviewing the report and then make a final determination at that time in regard to, you know, the confirmation of our next course of action.
Yes, and I think it'll be more appropriate, and they'll be willing to come to the board to give occasional updates on how things are going and, you know, what they're doing, so.
Okay, thank you. Then I attended on October the 23rd a Cal Poly strategic planning meeting, which is also the vision of Cal Poly, and this is for the College of Ag, Food, and Environmental Science. And the reason I bring up this meeting is that what was interesting is that the three overarching pillars of the strategic plan and their vision of the future was in order of priority: climate change, the second one, water, and the third one was sustainability, particularly regarding soil. And it was interesting to see that this really rise to the top, considering all the other priorities and interest that the Cal Poly has. Then I attended with Mr. Harris on October the 30th, a meeting with Supervisor Bruce Gibson, pardon me, regarding the Morro Bay and Cayucas potential regionalization of the water treatment plant with the Man's Colony. Then late last night, actually, that's why Mr. Harris is suffering a little bit, we attended a meeting that ended at 11:15 p.m. in Morro Bay, also regarding the regionalization potential of the water treatment plant between Morro Bay, Cayucas, and the Man's Colony. And the reason, as a water board, we have a keen interest is that this entails to a brand new water treatment plant, since the existing location in Morro Bay has been disallowed by the Coastal Commission due to climate change, seawater rise. So there's an opportunity here to have a much more efficient approach of taking basically three plants into one and having a very robust recycled water program. Hence the reason we are attending many of these meetings. And that, I think, covers my activities for the last couple of months. So I will have Dr. Hunter give us her updates, including your updates on the EJ.
Thank you, Chair Wolf. So holding my comment on item 15, on October 7th, I attended the UN consultation on environmental issues relating to human rights with Angela Schroeder at UC Berkeley School of Law. It was very interesting. It is a convening that occurs periodically. It was very California-centric, which I found encouraging of the work that we're doing here, recognizing different policies and programs that are supporting environmental justice considerations. The groups that were on the panels included speakers, included the Environmental Justice Coalition for Water, the Winneman Wintu Tribe, the Unitarian Universalist Service Committee, the Center for Race, Poverty, and Environment, Leadership Council for Justice and Accountability, NRDC, and the California Rural Legal Assistance. These groups represent a great deal of work that's going on in our state, and in addition to their work, USEPA also signaled that they are looking at the Cal EnviroScreen program, which was developed by our State Office of Environmental Health Hazard Assessment, as a model for national application. So I think, again, the work that we're doing here within the state is helping to not only develop policies, but tools that are going to support looking at different interpretations for what exactly environmental impacts look like that raise environmental justice concerns. I think the big shift with CalEnviroScreen is that it shifts away from zip codes to census tracts. So there's expectations that that's going to better inform policymakers as well as gaps in program support. The pollution burden by census tract and as well as characterizing populations. But we did, at the WQCC, moving on to that, we did learn from Geeta Kapahi, who held an environmental justice session that all board members attended during the two-day or one-and-a-half-day meeting, that CalEnviroScreen is weighted for air quality. So the water quality aspect of that is yet to be refined to the level that we will need. Other than that, we were presented with an update on environmental justice, kind of an inventory of programs and activities, and I found it very interesting to note that the Office of Chief Counsel identified permitting and enforcement actions in the Central Coast region as well as in the Central Valley as making great progress, and I think this is in part due to the SBX 2 legislation as well as the Harder report that identified the Salinas Valley and the Tulare Lake Basin as areas of high priority for addressing nitrate contamination in groundwater. And the US EPA has also recognized these two areas, the Salinas in particular, as having the highest nitrate contamination levels in the nation. So we certainly have, in this region three, the Central Coast, we have a great deal of effort and priority going on in terms of staff looking into different aspects of nitrate contamination and vulnerable communities. And finally, in my regional look at how the work that staff is doing, we've been tracking and working collaboratively with a group out of UCLA led by Madeline Glickman, who also happens to be on the Water Board of Los Angeles region, and with interest from State Board Director or Executive Director Tom Howard and Felicia Marcus, Chair of the State Board. They are really shepherding this program through State Board support. And we had been in the running for identifying pilot project location, and we've been informed. I'm glad to say that we will have three pilot sites pending a few more steps, including the next phase of funding from the State Board. But I think with Chair Marcus's interest and Tom Howard's support, we will see continued funding for a three-year project, which is essentially a chance to look at RO wellhead treatment in removing nitrates. So there will be an opportunity to see if this can be a cost-effective approach to solving the problem of contaminated water. We're still working on organizing environmental justice tours to communities in our region that are dealing with water issues. And so we're looking forward to February and March of next year. And I want to encourage board members to, good morning, Mr. Delgado, to be stay in the loop on that, because we do have a limit of how many board members can go on a single tour, but we certainly want to have an opportunity to meet with the groups that are organizing work and deeply involved with communities looking at the impact of contaminated water. And finally, ending on a good note, I learned yesterday that the San Lucas community, with the effort of Michael Thomas and Hector Hernandez, have finally resolved their water quality issues with the approval of a new well. This will allow 80 homes and the public school to cease the use of bottled water, and which they've had to do since 2012. So it's took a great deal of work, but we are happy for the community of San Lucas now that they have their replacement water in the form of tap water, once again, coming out of their faucets. So that's the end of my report. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Hunter, and Ms. Olson, just for the record, Mayor Delgado is here, and Mr. Mike Johnston. So, Mr. Johnston.
First, I want to apologize for arriving late. I was actually here on time. Unfortunately, my briefcase was not. Let's see, my last couple of months. On October 1st, the day before the Water Quality Coordinating Committee, I participated in a tour that went to a couple of places. The first was a rain garden in the city of Elk Grove. They had taken a one-acre site behind City Hall that was basically an empty lot and transformed it into a demonstration site for a variety of techniques for both for water conservation and for on-site retention of rainwater. It was a little ironic because it was blistering hot and far from the nearest raindrop. We were all sort of huddling in the shelter of the only shade on the site as we went through there. And the other part of the tour that was really pretty interesting was an Aerojet Rocketdyne treatment facility. They have a rocket fuel plant there that has a plume of contaminant that I don't even remember coming out from it. In an area where there are multiple municipal wells. What they're doing isn't extraordinary in and of itself. They've set up a system of barrier wells to pull out the to pull out water and treat it. But what's interesting about it is they kind of got ahead of the curve. Aerojet Rocketjet has been involved in lots of litigation in lots of different places around different plumes, and this time they really they sat down with both the water districts and local governments to sort of short circuit all the litigation and to just say let's do it. And you know, one of the problems in those situations is usually nobody wants the treatment facility sited in their backyard. And on the basis of working with the local governments, it's really helped to resolve that problem. The facility that we visited was located in a county park that had a golf course. It was pulling up the water, treating it. This particular contaminant can be treated with UV, and using a fair chunk of it to irrigate the golf course, thereby replacing other water that would have been pulled for that, and putting the excess back into the American River there, and it was an interesting example of what happens when a discharger actually decides it's smarter to simply get ahead of the problem and deal with it instead of fight about it. On the 2nd and 3rd of October, I attended the Water Quality Coordinating Committee focusing on groundwater and the drought. You know, one of the takeaways for me in that was, of course, in our region where the vast majority of our drinking water, 80-some percent, is groundwater, and where there are huge problems with both overdraft, seawater intrusion, nitrate pollution, you know, a pretty substantial chunk of all of our water quality issues in this region are groundwater issues. Of course, we've been chomping at the bit for a long time to see some sort of regulatory structure for groundwater. And, you know, it was a little frustrating to hear at the conference that okay, the big day has arrived and we have a regulatory structure, but the first couple years are giving the local governments the chance to form their own agencies to manage each basin, and the next couple years are giving them the chance to put together a sustainability plan, and you know, in a way, it's kind of frustrating because we're like, all right, let's just do it already, but it makes a lot of sense in a lot of ways because it's not a small or a simple thing to either form new agencies or create new powers for old agencies or coalitions of old agencies. And it was made very clear to us, and I think it makes sense that the state doesn't have the resources to do this across the state, and that the real push is to focus on getting local agencies to deal with the problem and to step in only when that's not happening. So in a way, it's frustrating because I was all ready with my regional water board hat to say, okay, let's go start regulating, but that's not really the program. On October 14th, I, along with board member Bruce McPherson and a good chunk of the regional board staff, went to a tour just south of Salinas of a project sponsored by CURES. I don't even know what CURES stands for. It's I knew at one point, but it's a CURES. It is a groundwater sustainability organization that comes out of the Central Valley, organized by agricultural industry, basically. Headed up by Perry Clausen, who's also heading the Groundwater Coalition here, the Groundwater Monitoring Coalition. And this was a project that they had secured funding for. They were doing it on a Nunes Company romaine lettuce field to really get a clearer picture of what happens to nitrates applied to the field. And what they were doing was they had a huge field of lysimeters planted 3 feet down in the field. I think there were 60 of them in a 3-acre plot or 4-acre plot. They were doing different fertilizer protocols on the two different halves of the field. And measuring exactly what went past the root zone with the different protocols, and you know, we've been doing a lot of modeling and a lot of policy making based on that modeling of what actually goes past the root zone in different conditions. So it's very useful to see people actually gathering concrete data to verify those models, There we go, Coalition for Urban Rural Environmental Stewardship. Who could be against that? Finally, on November 3rd, I met individually with Perry Clausen, John Eiskamp, who's a Watsonville area berry grower and board member of Grower Shipper of the Salinas Valley Grower Shipper, Abby Taylor Silva from the Salinas Valley Grower Shipper, and Kara, whose last name I always lose.
Kara?
Stewart from the Groundwater Monitoring Coalition. And they basically wanted to update me on the progress of discussions with board staff on reporting for drinking water well exceedances by the coalition. And that's what I got.
Thank you. Mr. Jordan?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple. Last 60 days, I went to a couple community meetings of the Montecito Water District concerning their plans to have a desal plant in operation, according to them, by the end of 2016. I was with about 500 of my closest friends crammed into a room. There's a great deal of interest down in that community on the desal operation, and they face some challenges and that all of their consultants looks at where landfall will be as private property, where the siting for discharges is private property, and maybe they could use the sanitary district, but they haven't talked to the sanitary district yet, so they're on a fast track, but they've got a a bunch of challenges ahead of them and how they're going to fast-track that. Also, a couple weekends ago, before the Tuesday Santa Barbara County Board of Directors meeting that involved their potential adoption of their LAMP program, the Friday before and the Saturday before, I met with Hillary Hauser of Heal the Ocean to hear about some concerns from her regarding the adoption of the LAMP. I subsequently talked to Board Member Young, Board Member Wolf, and Executive Officer Harris, and I'm sure as the board member know by now that as a result of some of the conversation then back and forth between our staff and county staff, that item was pulled that Monday afternoon from the Tuesday meeting, and I guess there's more discussion to happen. And then I think I just mentioned, I'll ignore council's admonition on irrigated lands because I'm not really sure if it applies, but I attended a meeting here yesterday to with staff to get a better understanding of GeoTracker and GeoTracker Gamma, specifically as it applies to the irrigated lands program. And again, thank staff for that. I think I'm going to try and avail myself more of those Wednesday afternoons before a two-day meeting. It was a great opportunity. And I'm sure some of the questions and answers strayed into both the notification process that's on today's agenda and also on a future agenda item concerning what contour maps would look like and how that would look on GeoTracker or GeoTracker Gamma and the role that would play. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Jordan. Mayor, any additional input?
Just like to say I enjoyed the October 14th tour.
Excuse me, Mr. Delgado, use your microphone, please. Thank you.
Thanks. I enjoyed the October 14th tour that Mike Johnson spoke about on the lettuce field at Nunez Farms, and thanks to Perry Clausen. I think he was the main organizer there. And it was great to see so many staff get up that way to that tour, and at least a couple board members, myself and Mike. So it was really good to see that perhaps they will actually save money by applying 50% less nitrogen to the same crop at the same location. And it seems if that's successful, that if it was done, you know, maybe 50 to a couple hundred other places after finding, you know, 5 to 10 million maybe to do that, that it could be somewhat revolutionary. And I hope that there's money, because it's kind of a penny on the dollar if that kind of research were to continue at other replicate sites. So that was very helpful for me, and I understand that there are other efforts going around the nation doing that sort of research and that sort of project, and so maybe we can all learn from each other and make good headway in that direction. I've been wrapped up in the Monterey area with the desal project proposal for that California American Water is pushing through different layers of government. Yesterday, the California Coastal Commission, some of you may know, but some of you may not know, they voted unanimously to overturn the City of Marina's denial of the CalAmp's request to drill test slant wells. These are slant wells that go diagonally under the ocean floor so that there can be a feasibility test to see if that environmentally preferable intake source can work. And apparently there's nowhere in the world that it is working or is operational, and so it's fairly highly experimental, but there's a lot of political issues in the background. But basically the facts are they'll start drilling, installing that test well within weeks, because they have to complete construction of that test well or test wells. I'm not sure if there's one or two prior to the snowy plover mating season, which generally begins March 1st, and you can't do disturbance activities in the snowy plover zone. So that's a big issue up in the Monterey Bay area, and I think it's being looked at around the state. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor Delgado. And before introducing Mr. Stephen Moore, I would like to remind all of you that public comment will not start before 1:30. I will need speaker cards, and also The speaker cards for the agenda items of today are in my left in the back. So if you intend to speak, please fill out one of the forms so I can organize the schedule accordingly. So thank you.